Well, hi, friends. It has been now 1 month and a few days since, in the middle of all of these post-election difficulties, I've been able to undertake this work on occult meditation again. And I want to tell you, I've really been missing it. Tuya and I, you know, every night, just about every night, for 80 nights in a row, worked on trying to do our esoteric part with the help of a group to defend democracy as it was seriously challenged in the United States. And it has been a taxing ordeal. So, you know, you do end up feeling it after a while. But here we are again, back in this wonderful book. And meanwhile, an excellent photograph of the Tibetan has apparently appeared. At least it says Jwal Kul, and it was found in the Agni Yoga Society, which is a little ironic, as there was a time when Alice Bailey and Madame Rurik, who were friends, and even worked, I think, in the same building, had a falling out of some kind. And I think that Madame Rurik never gave credence to the idea that Alice Bailey was communicating with Jwal Kul, whom naturally Madame Rurik respected, but that some other Tibetan, probably, you know, on the left-hand path or something of that nature, was her point of communication, which was, in terms of the work in the world, a great unfortunate assessment. Well, in any case, one of our group members did bring to our attention this wonderful photograph. And I wonder if I can find it here and show it to you. So this is the photograph apparently taken in 1928. And, you know, the Letters on Occult Meditation from which we are reading right now, most of those letters were from 1920. So, drawings have been made, I think, of this particular image. And you know how occult gossip is, but word has it from the Asheville group long ago, I spoke to a woman who was then 92 years old when I was visiting more than 20 years ago. And she said that the word had come down that the young man who painted an image of Jwal Kul had a report, or that a report was given that it was a pretty good likeness. And it looks a lot like this image, so maybe he got a hold of it somehow from the Rurik Museum. I'm still not sure which Rurik Museum we're talking about, but the one in New York is the most prominent. Well, look, on the inside, the masters are great cooperators with each other, and when tensions and frictions arise, it's the doing of the misunderstanding of their disciples, who should know better. We know how closely associated Master DK is with both Master Moria and Master Kudumi. They form an inner triangle in relation to which we all have attempted to do a lot of work and follow their instructions. So, of course, you know, the real individual is something other than the outer form, but sometimes it is the outer form that helps us tune in. And all, you know, there have been impressed images of Master KH and Master M. I think there was a German artist by the name of Schleiermacher, which means veil maker, interestingly enough. And he apparently was impressed with images that were accurate from KH and M. And it can help as long as we realize that the real inner human being is something other. So I just thought I'd show that to you. It seems correct. Now, our segue into our next, I think it's program 57, and the segue from a month ago. If the student, if the student but provides the right conditions, if he conforms to the necessary rules, if he aims always at regularity, at calmness, at that inner concentration that holds the mystery of the high places, he will, on certain occasions and with ever increasing frequency, awake to some definite realizations. These realizations will be the outer recognition of inner results and will be the guarantee to him that he is on the right path. Sometimes we do need those guarantees. We must not trust ourselves too much because it's easy these days to be misled by glamour, by wishful thinking, and for the mental, more mental type of student, by illusion. But I would here point out, he says again, that these results are only achieved after long practice, strenuous struggle, diligent disciplining of the threefold lower man, and consecrated service to the world. So let us measure ourselves against those requirements. If you think about Master DK, probably 2,500 years ago, he was very much involved with Pythagoras. And word comes down that he was called Cleinias, the just Greek. So obviously he was an individual of some standing to be, shall we say, second in responsibility in Pythagoras' school. So when we talk about long practice, you know, and the other incarnations that he has taken, maybe his name was once Arya Sangha, the noble brotherhood. In 2011, some of us attended the Dalai Lama's Kalachakra in Washington, D.C. And it seemed that this character, Arya Sangha, close to Nagarjuna, another name for Master KH, but that Arya Sangha was capable of communicating with the Lord Maitreya in what is called the Tushita heavens or heaven. So he's been studying, practicing, a long time. And now he is ashram emerging as one of the five initial ashrams to emerge, as we learn in externalization of the hierarchy. He is carrying the note of right human relations, which is no surprise to us if we've studied the Tibetan, known as Jwal Kul, to us anyway, if we've studied him carefully. So here we are, as I say, a month later, wishing it could be every day. And we're talking about methods of approach and effects obtained. And as usual, I try to get a little bracket there in case I have to write something. The methods of approach are broadly three. And we might indicate five results that will eventuate from employment of these methods. The three methods are sanctified service. That means with the right motive, of course, and for holy purposes. Love demonstrating through wisdom and intellectual application. Looks like they are kind of in ray order, you know. Whenever studying decay, always look to see whether there's some ray or zodiacal structure underneath what he says. Oh, I'd like to make those a little bigger, perhaps. And there we are. They are all three, but diverse methods of expressing one and the same thing, three in one. Active one-pointedness that expresses itself in service for the race through love and wisdom. And there, you know, Master DK is so excellent at summarizing or synthesizing what he has said. They are all three. Sanctified service, love demonstrating, and through wisdom and intellectual application. All three are one and the same thing, really, expressing one and the same thing. Active one-pointedness that expresses itself in service. You know, the activity, the one-pointedness, first ray, third ray, expresses itself in service for the race through love, second ray, wisdom, partially second ray, and pervading all rays, really. But some individuals express this in one way and some in another. Some carry the outer appearance of intellectuality. That's interesting. Outer appearance. And others of love. The intellectuality, you know, goes along with the third ray that we usually portray in green, and others express the love. And many of us spend a long time trying to determine what our particular outer carriage is. The outer appearance, it's almost as if inwardly, the higher we go, the more we are equipped with all of these qualities. But in any particular planet or solar system, we demonstrate one or the other of them. Yet before the attainment is possible, you know, the real tuning in on the inner and higher states of apprehension, before the attainment is possible, intellectuality must be based on love. Love is behind the intellect, while love without mental development and that discrimination that mind affords is apt to be unbalanced and unwise. Both love and mind must be expressed in terms of service before the full flower of either is attained. He's showing how they blend together. These are sort of Venusian thoughts, I might say. Let us consider each of these methods separately and indicate the meditation to be followed thereon. So the planet Venus is here involved. The blending of mind and love, you know, it's fifth ray soul and it's sixth ray, second ray monad. Before the attainment is possible, intellectuality must be based on love, whilst love without mental development and that discrimination that mind affords is apt to be unbalanced and unwise. Venus, yes, and Mercury along with it, I would say, especially for discrimination. Okay. So, and I'll add to this, Mercury helps with discrimination. So now we take each of the three separately. And the first one is the sanctified service. It has kind of a first ray meaning in this context. This is the method of the man who wields the law, the method of the occultist, and the rudiments of the method are laid down in Raja Yoga, and then we have kind of an ellipse. Some of these missing sections will be found in a new website that deals with some of the writings of AAB as taken down directly. But we have to respect, I would say, Alice Bailey's choice and the choice of her editor to leave some of these things out of a book for publication. So the word sanctification, as you know, in the basic sense, signifies complete surrender of the whole being to one object, the Lord or ruler. And this seems like Pisces. It means the giving wholly to the one the devotee aspires to. This is, these are good thoughts and maybe not usually entertained. It means the consecration of the whole threefold man to the work in hand. It entails, therefore, the application of the entire time and self to the bringing of each body under the subjugation of the ego, i.e., soul triad, and the complete mastery of each plane and subplane. It involves a lot, doesn't it? It involves the comprehension of each evolution and form of divine life as found on those planes and subplanes, I suppose the devic component of the man, with one aim in view and only one, the furthering of the plan of the hierarchy of light. So let us, this excellent definition of sanctification. Let us highlight this. It is something that seems to be worth rereading. Okay. I'm going to okay. I really want to ponder that, don't you? He says, as you know. Well, do we know? It signifies the complete surrender of the whole being to one object, the Lord or ruler. Now, who is that Lord or ruler? The soul, the triad, the Master, the Christ, Sanat Kumara, the initiator. It means the giving wholly to the one the devotee aspires to. So there, the complete giving of the self. To those who give all is given. It means the consecration, the making sacred of the whole threefold man, or the dedication, we could say, spiritual dedication of the whole threefold man to the work in hand. There's nothing left of the, let's see, the personal self is out of the picture. It entails, therefore, the application of the entire time. How do we spend our time? And self to the bringing of each body under the subjugation of the ego. He's been teaching us how to do that, but it's probably a task not yet completed for most of us, isn't it? And the complete mastery of each plane and subplane, so that the none of the impulses of those planes, subplanes, run away with one and determine our direction instead of we, the inner God, determining their direction. It involves the comprehension of each evolution and form of divine life as found on those planes and subplanes. So let us say, you know, devas and elementals. And other beings, with one aim in view, and only one, the furthering of the plan of the hierarchy of light. So, you know, we can ask ourselves about the level of our consecration. That only one aim is in view. It's a bit like the dedication to the coming of the Christ. I have no other life intention. and here one aim in view and only one, the furthering of the plan of the hierarchy of light. The method followed is that of the intensest application to the work of rounding out the bodies and of making them fit instruments for service. The sphere is considered the ideal figure, and the rounding out is a Jupiterian activity. It leads to completeness, fulfillment, the will to fulfillment, Leo, Jupiter involved. It is perhaps the hardest way a man can tread. It leaves no department of the life untouched. All is brought under law. I think anybody who commits to this path of sanctification discovers that it is, as he says. Of course, what have we to compare it to? But somehow, some of us, maybe after many mistakes and long suffering, decide that this is the way to fulfill, to give our all. I think our recent president finally inaugurated, said, I'm in it with my whole soul. He uses the word soul and he means it. The intensest application to the work of rounding out the bodies, making them fit instruments for service, probably under many circumstances, probably under circumstances which are not all the most pleasant, but they are necessary. All is brought under law. In meditation, therefore, the form of that meditation will be of a threefold structure. And this is for those choosing the path of sanctification and of utter consecration. The form of the meditation will be threefold. So, threefold in structure. A, the laws governing the physical body will be studied and brooded over. This brooding will find expression in a rigid disciplining of the physical body. It will be set apart wholly for service and subjected consequently to a process that will attune and develop it more quickly. Well, how do we see our physical body? How do we use it? Probably at first, not in this way, which is really demanding. And obviously, you know, something about healing will be learned. He's been speaking of the use of the spine, the spleen, the pranic triangle. He's been talking about how to get rid of the ills of the physical, the troubles that prevent our service from being all that it can be. So, you know, the second ray method has a lot to do with pondering, with brooding, with hovering over, until one is more certain of what one is doing, and illumination comes. So there are ways to treat the physical body which are not customary. Rigid disciplining. I wonder how many of us have engaged in rigid disciplining, but without fanatical excess. I'm remembering in my own life fanatical excess and the opposite. But okay, the noble middle path in this particular approach is required. So the form of the meditation will be a threefold structure on the laws of the physical body. And then the body of the emotions will be scientifically studied, and the laws of water, occultly understood, will be comprehended. That is interesting. The waters, the lower Agnisurians, were probably the first. Point A involves the Agni Chaitans to a great degree. I think there are definitely higher Agnisurians. I suspect there are higher Agni Chaitans, and we know there are lower and higher Agnish Vatas for the mental plane. So the body of the emotions will be scientifically studied. The significance of the term "there shall be no more sea" will be known, and the sea of storm and passion will be superseded by the sea of glass, which directly reflects the higher intuition. It's the astral Buddha connection, right? And mirrors it with perfect accuracy, being unruffled and immovable. So this is the necessary calming of the variations, modifications of aspects of the lower self. Modifications, that's what they call it. The calming of the modifications of the lower self, whether it's emotions, mind, or, the physical nature, etheric physical nature. It has to be fit when engaging in meditation, which is to lead to higher impression. The emotional body will be set apart wholly for service, and its place, in the threefold microcosm will be regarded as corresponding to that of the macrocosm, whilst the occult significance of its being, the only complete unit, see, no dotted line, no division between 3 and 4 or 4 and 3, whilst the occult significance of its being the only complete unit in the threefold lower nature will be apprehended, and the fact made use of to effect certain results. Ponder on this. We do live in a solar system which is largely astral Buddhic. At this particular solar system, and the astral body is the most powerful body of the lower three, at least in the beginning. Later, progress is made and other vehicles take over. But we have to learn that in this astrobotic solar system, it is also the astral body of the solar logos, which is the most powerful. But he is moving, we understand, towards the third cosmic initiation, which will make his expression more akin to that of Sirius and the cosmic mental vehicle will be strongly developed. How do we set aside the emotional body wholly for service? Well, maybe psychologists can tell us that. Maybe those who work in the field of the New World religion. Maybe those who are observers of reality. What I'm basically doing is looking at the 10 seed groups, and I'm looking at those seed groups for which the solar plexus is one of the centers used. That is, the observers of reality, group number two, the people who work in the New World religion, group number six, and the psychologists also use the solar plexus center, group number eight. And there we have four chakras at work. Have I skipped any? I don't know. I don't think so. But when the solar plexus is at work, the emotional body can be directed to be set apart wholly for service, for empathy, for the receipt of the intuition, for identification with others and their emotional states. There's much more here to ponder on. Okay, so what we're looking at here, always good to remind ourselves, I think, the forms of meditation that will be threefold in structure. When one is choosing the really difficult path of total consecration and sanctification. Okay. And then meditation upon the place of lower mind in the scheme of things. It will be studied, and the quality of discrimination developed. We notice that the fourth subplane is called, of the mental plane, is called the plane of discrimination. And one of the really important discriminations that can be achieved on that level is the difference between soul and personality. Sometimes we may think we are living according to soul, only to discover really that we've been living according to a high aspiration in the personality. He points this out. We have to learn how to, in contemplation, identify as the soul, as we observe objects which we learn to consider as ourselves. The perceiver and the perceived are one. So we use the lower mind in meditation. That's the Virgo part of the lower mind, pretty much. Leo concentration, Virgo meditation. And we can discriminate between many things on the horizontal level, but it's the vertical discriminations which are really of importance. Discrimination and fire, fire, you know, being the quality of mind, and I'll write that down. Fire has the quality of mind, are occultly allied. I mean, fire takes things apart, you know, and shows the difference between them. And just as the Logos by fire tries every man's work of what sort it is. Now, will this be the planetary Logos, perhaps? So the microcosm on a lesser scale has to do the same. You've got to admit that there are some really interesting ideas brought forth here in this book. Okay. So fire is the quality of mind. Just as the Logos likewise does this paramountly. You know, fire, five, the fifth round, the judgment day, we have to put these thoughts together. Just as the Logos likewise does this paramountly in the fifth round of judgment and of separation, where some remain with Earth and some human beings go elsewhere, probably among other places to Mars for further training and to interior, maybe places within the Earth scheme, interior globes and so forth, but remaining with the Earth are three-fifths. So just as the Logos likewise does this paramountly in the fifth round of judgment and of separation, so the microcosm on his lesser scale does the same in the last and fifth period of his evolution, touched upon and earlier described in these letters. And I suppose, what would this fifth period be? Something that occurs in relation to the fifth initiation, or in relation to initiation as a whole? We have a fivefold possibility of work within the Hall of Ignorance, then the Hall of Learning, then the Hall of Wisdom, mental sacrifice, then the Hall of Synthesis, can we call it that, where the synthesis petals are opening, and finally, the work within the jewel itself. In any case, certain of our habits, certain of our tendencies, our patterns, are rejected at a certain point. We try them by fire on a burning ground. And we reject or transform. We reject that which no longer serves on the burning ground. We try our patterns by fire. I guess this judgment day, whether it's going to be occurring in the fifth round of this particular chain, or in the fifth scheme round. Maybe there's another name for that scheme round. I think I was just studying it, but okay, but in any case, there are two kinds of rounds. It's difficult to say exactly when that will be. I think we have a judgment day in relation to our fourth chain. So that would be a chain round. So on the burning ground, we try our patterns, and maybe the way to put it down is as by fire. Judgment and separation, you know, because the number five is appropriate for that. The fifth ray rules the law of cleavages, separations. So that would be the time to separate the sheep from the goats. And interestingly, Capricorn does have something to do with concretion and with the concrete mind. It may be the conveyor of the first, third, and seventh rays, but it also is connected with the concrete mind and division. Can we say that about Aries? Well, maybe not to the same extent. Every power of the mind will be utilized to the uttermost for the furtherance of the plans of evolution. First in a man's own department, then in the special field of work wherein he expresses himself, and lastly in his relationship with other units of the race as he constitutes himself their guide and servant. Notice the wisdom of how that is put. Not only is he their guide, but he is their servant guide. It reminds one of the concept of servant leadership, which has emerged recently and in business and in more developed estimations of how leaders should work. Every power of the mind will be used for the uttermost, used to the uttermost for the furtherance of the plans of evolution. So how do we deal with our thought? Do we dedicate our thought? In the first in the 15 councils, and found in Letters on Occult Meditation, page 473 or so, we will find that the mind is to be used in a particular way. I wonder if I can... I wonder if I can go there. It's in a treatise on white magic, page 473. And here it is. I'll show it to you. Act as the thinker and learn that it is not right to prostitute thy thought to the base use of separative desire. And more, this one is right on the button. The energy of thought is for the good of all and for the furtherance of the plan of God. Use it not, therefore, for thy selfish ends. Now that is That tells us the story, doesn't it? The energy of thought is for the good of all and for the furtherance of the plan of God. Use it not, therefore, for thy selfish ends. So every power of the mind will be utilized to the uttermost for the furtherance of the plans of evolution. If you pause for a moment, how are you using the energy of thought in your own life, in this incarnation? What is the preoccupation of your thought? With what are you mentally preoccupied? I'm thinking that there are so many things other than the plans for evolution to which thought seems to adhere. So we have some work to do. So DK points out, see you therefore the synthesis of it. First, make sure that this is correct. First, the strenuous one-pointedness that is the sign of the occultist blended with the wisdom and love which are reflected from the higher in the mirror of the emotional body, and then the intellect forced to act as the servant of the ego through one-pointed effort, animated by love and wisdom, the result will be the true yogi. And I wouldn't be surprised if he calls the true yogi the master here. Yeah. DK is marvelous at synthesizing what he has given. So what have we been looking at? We have been looking at this way of sanctification, this way of utter consecration, and how difficult it may be, and how the different departments of life are all touched. And they are touched through meditation upon the laws governing the physical and, I suppose, etheric, the body of emotions scientifically meditated upon and studied, the lower mind scientifically meditated upon and studied, so that discrimination can be developed. Everything used on this path of sanctification, everything used to further the plans of evolution. The energy of thought is for the good of all and for the, of the plan of God, and for the furtherance of the plan of God. Use it not, therefore, for thy selfish ends. So he puts this all together into a synthesis. And does so, expertly. Here's a very early book, but it's filled with occult jewels. He says, I would point out here that the true yogi is he who, after due carrying out of the set forms. We have studied those a little, or seen indications at least that they exist. After due carrying out of the set forms and times of meditation, we try to, you know, observe the times, full moon, new moon, solstices, equinoxes. Merges that meditation in everyday living and will eventually be in the attitude of meditation all the day. It seems like a very high ideal, doesn't it? Our points of attention, remember, he tells us, are scattered usually all over our personality. And rarely are we so concentrated that we live the entirely meditative life. The true observer, the true doer from a higher point of view, using our vehicles, which otherwise might impel us here and there, using them consciously and in service. Meditation is the means whereby the higher consciousness is contacted. Certainly a major theme in this book. When the contact becomes continuous, meditation, as you understand it, is superseded. In this first method, the occult student works from the periphery to the center, from the objective to the subjective, from the form to the life within the form. Okay, so basically, from, we might say, from outer to inner. Therefore, through the emphasis laid in Raja Yoga on the physical body and its wise control, the occultist realizes the essential importance of the physical and the uselessness of all his knowledge apart from a physical body whereby he can express himself and serve the race. Though I must say, I'm sure DK would agree that there is service from the inner side and from the subjective planes. But if you have a body, it has to be used in service. It is the line of the first ray and is affiliated with its complementary ray, presumably the seventh. It's affiliated or complementary ray. Well, the whole 1357 line, with the third ray being a little bit ambiguous, but the 1, 5, and 7 definitely connected with the first ray. So at first we work from the outer, from the periphery to the center, from the objective to the subjective, and from the form to the life within the form. And that's when we are dealing with the physical body particularly. And here, this is what we want to emphasize. The occultist realizes the essential importance of the physical and the uselessness of all knowledge apart from the physical body, the physical plane, which has to be transformed, whereby he can express himself and serve the race. Somehow, that which is known inwardly has to make its way into the outer world. I was thinking of it even in a class in philosophy, let's say. There you are, maybe sitting in a classroom, or maybe these days a virtual classroom. And it all seems like mental work, but it does reach the physical plane. After all, you are in a physical body. You are using your brain. You are together with others, one way or another, on the outer plane. And what you are learning from the inner side will affect the way you live as a temporarily physical being. So even when we're dealing with some of the higher sources of impression, it is coming through as manifestation. Now, what do we have? The love wisdom method and the intellectual application method. These are the three methods that we began with. And let's, go back here a little bit. The laws of the physical body, the emotions, and then the place of lower mind, okay. But we began even earlier, sanctified service, love demonstrating through wisdom, intellectual application. This is how we began our studies for this particular program. So he's kind of taking them one by one. And why don't I make them according to what we might call their colors? And finally, the green. Okay, these three. And that's where we are really right now. Okay, well, I'm not going to be too ambitious. I'm going to cut this at an hour, and I think, how far did we get? Up to page 285. Not very far, but at least enough to show us how to tread this path of sanctification, this path of utter consecration. So 282 to 285. And if I can, I will continue in a little while. Right. So this will have to do. And we'll begin here with the love wisdom aspect. This is sort of how to become a true yogi, So this would be the end of Letters on the Cult Meditation Program 57. And our next would be beginning of Letters on the Cult Meditation Visual Video Commentary Program 58. And we'd be beginning on page 285 on the XX of January 2021. Hopefully it's just a little while from now. It's good to be back with you. I know I'm, you know, speaking much more slowly than I did in the early days. Maybe it's just reduced brain function, perhaps. But on the other hand, I'd like us to really absorb what he's saying. I've been doing this now for about 10 years, one way or another, at least with the pre-full moon work and so forth. And making commentaries for, I don't know, 15 years or more. Hopefully they will help to guide the serious student who may find it helpful to have another student's ideas, that's mine, along with the Tibetans to help make the necessary links in our thought. So I'll come back to this shortly. And study hard and meditate deeply. And of course, to the extent possible, apply whatever you can learn. I try all the time. I fail all the time. Okay. Keep trying, and there will be a way to make all this as real as possible in the outer world. Real in that sense. From another point of view, very unreal. Okay. Lots of love, many blessings, and we'll see you soon.